You're listening to the Seasteading Today podcast, where we speak to entrepreneurs and researchers who are making the dream of seasteading a reality. The Seasteading Today podcast. Stop arguing and start seasteading.
Hello, Seasteaders. Today, I am happy to have Natalie Metzger-Garcia, complexity scientist and founder and CEO of Sophia, a consulting firm for floating architecture projects. She is also the former sea evangelist for Blue Frontiers and their floating island project in French Polynesia. I met her when I volunteered for Blue Frontiers a few years ago. Welcome, Natalie.
Hi, Carly. Thank you very much for having me here.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. And I'd like to start with talking about complexity science and how studying complexity science led to you studying seasteading.
Okay, sure. So I think it all started by recognizing what are the implications of dealing with systems that are complex. So a complex system is a system that has many parts, a huge diversity, a ton of nonlinear interactions, so unpredictable things that don't really have just one cause, and you cannot really have direct cause-effect relations. And when you realize that human societies are complex systems, then I just started thinking as a complexity science, whereas representative democracy was the best way in which we should organize human societies, because, well, what you have when you have a representative democratic system is an assumption that once you implement certain decisions upon the world, things will follow as you expect them. So I got to seasteading by trying to find new ways in which, or new means through which human societies could organize, or better said, self-organized. And after spending a good couple of years looking at digital systems as possible ways to mediate human decision-making, then I realized that many successful examples of things like direct online democracy didn't really work or didn't really do what they were supposed to, because at the end, to implement decisions upon the real world, you had to resort to representatives anyway. So I realized that if we want to improve current systems of decision-making, we have to change the relation we have with territories. And that's how I got to seasteading.
You just stated that so clearly and so perfectly that when, you know, after, you know, years of trying to grasp what was wrong and why it didn't feel like government in the US where I am is working, you summed it up perfectly, that it's dissatisfying. And so trying to find new solutions is the way to go. So thank you.
Oh no, thank you for being so sweet.
So as Sea Evangelist for Blue Frontiers, you were spokesperson for their floating island project. Can you tell us some of the lessons learned that from being involved with that project?
Yeah, I was the international spokesperson. I didn't have anything to do with relations within French Polynesia. So I didn't have any, in a way, jurisdiction there. But despite not having jurisdiction there, it was very clear to me how important local stakeholders have in a project. So I learned, or it just got confirmed, one of the things that I already knew through complex systems is you have to focus on the local level, because that's where all interactions truly happen. The rest, what you have at a global scale, is emerging dynamics, emerging social relations, emerging political and economic systems. But what you really have to focus on is in the local level. And I learned, or I saw, that the project the project really lacked through engagement with the local community, with the local interests, with the local culture. And I created Sophia not as a direct consequence of what I saw, but as an opportunity to do things how I would do them. So as a CEO of the company, I have jurisdiction in direct decision making into how things are done. And that's why one of my five guiding principles, in a way, is local community, local relation. That's different from local funding or having international funding. You can have a project that is internationally funded, yet it's made, if not for local people, at the least based on local social, economic, political relations. So it's not that a project has to be entirely locally focused in the type of tenants it targets, but it does have to have a coherence between what's the local culture and what's the type of services or type of tenants that you are trying to attract. But that was one of the things that I learned the most there.
Right. And so, you know, when I started volunteering for Blue Frontiers, I was in Austin, Texas, and a political activist there. And there had been a recent issue with Amazon trying to find their new headquarters, and the city of Austin had applied, and they offered all of these tax breaks. And I was on the side of, don't give this huge corporation a bunch of tax breaks, because that's going to put a burden on the rest of the locals for many years, and we don't have a guarantee that the corporation will stay. So I was on the side of not having these outside companies come in, and then with Blue Frontiers on the side of, oh no, please let us come and see, we can work with you and improve the economy there. And so, yeah, it makes sense that you have to be an ally of the locals, and you know, there's so much there with just, there's different cultures that have different openness to newcomers or to the type of economic regulation that we would need for seasteading. So is there any more to say about that in particular?
No, I think you've touched a very interesting point. I think that we can both agree that it all comes down to, it depends. Something that one location might be very open to might not work in a different location. Some cultures are more open than others to certain ideas. Others are more closed. Others have certain reasons to back it. In my PhD thesis, which I did about the Floating Island Project, actually, I discussed something that I called waves of cross-temporal and cross-spatial events. And I was able to see or to explain why exactly, or one reason, several, few reasons, why French Polynesians, just generalizing them, I shouldn't, but why in general French Polynesians didn't really want the floating island to be placed in their lagoon. And one reason has to do that about 200 years ago, they started to suffer a lot from waves of settlers and colonization. And even their environments was very disturbed with, for example, with French nuclear testing. There were between approximately 181 nuclear tests taking place in French Polynesian islands. And this was done with the consent of the government and against the will of the local population. And these nuclear tests even caused a tsunami, because they were under the atolls, under the islands, and one caused a part of an island of Mururoa to break, and it caused a tsunami. So, and also the nuclear tests generated a bunch of cases of problems in newborn human babies, caused fishes to die. So they had historical relations to be that strengthened sentiments of nationalism when they saw this other culture that could go, just like French did when they started settling from French Polynesian islands, with these experimental projects, and they did things that were not in the best.
Right. So, I mean, I can imagine that's very traumatic.
Yeah.
On a societal level.
Exactly.
And so I noticed one of your other points is to have a trustworthy and solid reputation. So when you're coming to a place and you want to propose building something like a floating platform in a nearby bay. What goes into that reputation so that you can confirm with them that you don't want to harm anyone, or you know, what does it mean to have a solid reputation when trying to approach a new community about accepting seasteading technology?
Well, I think it goes both ways, no? These projects have many stakeholders. Some are part of the projects, some are not. So you can have the company, maybe the private company leading the project. You can have local grassroots movements. You can have a few local representatives. So trust and reputation, it really comes to from all players to all players. So in the case of several of these projects that are taking place right now, it's usually a private foreign company going to a location with a local partner. I think they both should do the homework very well of researching the background of who they are getting involved with, because it's like a partnership, like a relationship, like a marriage. You don't just get involved with anybody. You don't just marry anybody because they seem cool, right? You do your research while you're dating, and then if they pass your inspection, then okay, cool. Same with a business partner, whether you're the local representative or the private company that is scouting for a location. You really have to make sure that each partner of your project, which is ultimately going to represent your venture, has a good business past that it promises promise what they deliver. So the internet is great to find out things about local partners. I think it just makes the project better, no? Because you don't want to get involved with local partners or international partners that don't really have a good track record. So that's what I mean. Trust and reputation, it matters in every single aspect of life. So it matters when you're trying to create, it especially matters when you're trying to create something that the first time you mention it to people, they go, So that's why it's important.
And I think that's a challenge for many seasteaders, because we're attracted to seasteading because we don't like the current systems in place that help you establish trust, right? We don't like current banking systems or, you know, the way that new companies get funded, because we struggle in those existing systems, and that's why we're looking to create something new.
Yeah.
So there's a trade-off, there's a balance there.
Yes, exactly. So I know that it's really difficult to make these projects happen. There's so many variables, right? But if you tick these few boxes, it just makes it easier. So the fact that it's really difficult to make them, and that most people go when they hear about them, it makes not everybody be on board with you at first. So I know that there is a tendency to just go with the first players who say, hey, hi, here, me, please. But that doesn't mean you don't have to do your homework. You should always do your homework. Always, always.
Very, very good point there. We get very excited when anyone has even heard the word seasteading. And
yeah, exactly.
So I want to go through, so the other points that we haven't mentioned yet, good government relations, economic self-sufficiency, and a well-scouted location. So I think well-scouted location seems like there's a lot to that. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, it means before you waste, not invest, but waste a bunch of resources in a location that for X or Y reason, there's signs since the beginning that it's not going to go through. Again, do your homework. So private companies they have a finite runway. So by well-scouted location, I mean a location that since the beginning doesn't have red flags, right? A place that seems in every single aspect open to these ideas, and that it has the social, economic, politic, historical, historical indications that, yeah, this could work out here. So, no, I don't even mean finding a location where it's technologically feasible to set up a few floating platforms with residences or businesses on top. Because what I've learned is that that's actually the easy part. It's the political capital that is difficult. It's the social capital where you'll find most challenges. So even though a well-scouted location could seem as a location search in terms of geography, water depth, waves, etc., currents, I actually mean social, political, economic things. So you just have to make sure that whatever location you are looking at, it has coherence among all these aspects, and that just listen to any red flags you have. Just don't ignore them because you think that what you're doing is really cool. And I think that's the best way for these projects to be successful, just to try to make things that are coherent in every sense.
Sure. And so that can lead us into Sophia and the services that Sophia will offer. So tell us a bit about the inspiration for Sophia.
Yeah. So after having researched in depth a lot for the PhD about every single previous seasteading attempt that there has existed, from the first cases of Minerva Reef to even literature with islands like Ben Salem and things like that, to ocean builders passing through the French Polynesia Project. After having researched what went wrong in all of those cases and what were the problems, I decided to take a more practical approach. I've never been really a person that is more fundamental when it comes to ideologies. I think that when you have something that is so complex, you just have to break it down and focus on the business, right? On the business case. Okay, I have this long-term vision. Cool, but what can I actually make? What is feasible to do right now in the short term? So at Sophia, which is my biz dev and consulting company for floating architecture projects and for special economic zones, I focus on doing the homework. I know I've said this a lot, but on doing market studies to test out if there's demand in a location. I also offer a very unique service, which is complexity analysis, just to see, okay, what is the situation that we're facing? And based on that, what are the leverage points that we can tackle, that we can address to make this more, to make this easier to navigate? There's also the typical legal studies where you find out that when you're doing this project, you're actually dealing with a system that is nested, that has multiple levels of jurisdictions and tangled regulations among them. So you really have to know what's the legal environment that you're dealing with. And we offer those services to community engagement plans to get to know, okay, what's the social space here, what's the culture, and how can we get to a middle point? How can you, as a business person leading this project, can get to a middle point between what this location desires and what your investors are searching for? So that's basically what we do at Sophia. I take a very just straightforward business, sometimes even real estate or simply regulation separated approach to making either floating developments or other type of or special jurisdictions. And right now I'm working on a very cool project. I cannot say much, but it's a floating blue clean tech accelerator, because as all of your listeners and as you must already know, I don't think I have to explain, but if we want to create floating developments on the ocean, then you have to propel the entire blue ecosystem. So I think that an accelerator, a blue clean tech accelerator, can really help early stage startups to move in that direction, or at least to create awareness of these new technologies for energy, waste, water, renewables, biomaterials, etc. And it can help. So it's a project that ticks two boxes. On the one side, it generates awareness of issues that can be addressed in coastal areas with floating buildings. And at the same time, with the accelerator on the floating building, it propels the entire blue clean tech ecosystem in the location that we are looking at. So it's just a way to be practical and very business focused as opposed to anything else about how to reach to, how to make these projects happen.
Sounds great. So can people reach out to you directly if they have a business that they want to launch?
Oh yeah, absolutely. My email is natalie@sifia.blue. Sure. Yeah. I'm always open to listening ideas because it's in those spontaneous clashes with people and connections that you can see what can you do. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So where can people find, like, learn about these kinds of startup businesses? You know, we get a lot of emails from different parts of the world, and it's sometimes hard to know, you know, which conferences are worth going to or how to figure out where we're going to make contacts who are going to help with seasteading. Do you have some advice on that count?
Well, I assume that many of your listeners are in the US, and I think my 100% favorite by far project in along these lines within the US, it's in LA, it's in the port of LA. It doesn't focus on floating technologies, but it does focus on business around floating technologies that can help prepare the entire ecosystem. It's called Alta Sea. And it's a huge space that used to be port warehouse. It's at the port, and it takes a location that used to be port warehouses, and it turned it into a research center for maritime technologies. I like that a lot. On the other side, if you're more interested in the governance and the special regulations aspect of seasteading, then I think two favorite resources. One, you can go to the Seasteading Institute. If you're listening to this, you're already here, so cool for that. And the other is the Startup Societies Foundation. By the way, we launched yesterday a journal, the only journal focused, academic peer review journal focused on special jurisdictions. We focus on this first issue on non-territorial forms of governance. And there's an article by Brad Taylor and Patrick Friedman, actually, that has a very cool section on seasteading and how could entrepreneurial entry in the governance market through things like zone-based governance, seasteading, blockchain, could help surpass some of the entry barriers that there is for entrepreneurs for non-large nation states in the governance industry. So those three, Alta Sea, if you're in the US and you're interested in the maritime aspect, or the Seasteading Institute and the Startup Societies Foundation with its research arm, the Institute for Competitive Governance for regulations aspect.
Thank you for that. And congrats on launching the Journal of Special Jurisdictions. That's great.
Oh, thanks. No, it's really cool. The team is really cool. I'm very excited with it because I feel it's a way in which to contribute to both sides, actually. I don't like to talk about sides, but it's a way to contribute to both sides. One thing that I realized while doing my PhD is that the literature on seasteading is very polarized. So on the one hand, you have authors who have been in the past or present associated to the Seasteading Institute, and those foundational authors tend to describe the basics of seasteading and to propose ideas related to it. That those are the minority. On the other side, you have the majority of other texts that mention seasteading, and they usually do it in a very critical, with very critical lenses, talking about geographies of the super rich and how my favorite funny quote, billionaires just want to see the world burn and things like that. And so with this academic journal, I feel that I have a very direct input into considering both sides and delivering through academic objectivity and rigid peer review blind procedures. What's really behind this, right? So I really like it. I think you should check out, if you're listening to this, that first issue. We work very hard in it, and the next issues we are going to publish, there's one about special jurisdictions in a post-COVID world based on a conference that we had on the 1st and 2nd of May at the Startup Scientist Foundation. It was a virtual summit. We are publishing all the videos online these weeks. And the other one is about the SEDE, the SEDE program in Honduras. So, no, there's a lot of work and a lot of, maybe, Carly, we can work together on a seasons issue. We can talk about that later. But yeah, just check it out. It's really cool. What I like the most about this issue in particular is that authors were allowed to propose different forms of governance that are not mainstream, yet in a way that keeps the academic rigor. So I really liked that a lot. It's a nice thing that to contribute to. Yeah.
That sounds great, that we need a space to figure out how we can improve. Yeah. And that needs to be a sincere discussion. Exactly. And not, as you said, polarized. So that's
exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think I need to let you go, unfortunately, but is there anything else you'd like to say about, or to encourage people who want to CSTED?
Yeah, I think we forgot to touch on a point, and it's the importance of working with existing governments, especially local governments. I think that is something where previous seasteading attempts have something that they haven't really done very well. And I think it's true value in working with institutions that are already there, even though it's like a... even though many people might not feel comfortable working with the type of systems that they might criticize. But I think there's a lot of value in playing with rather than against them, especially local governments in coastal cities. They are really, many governments are really open to good business ideas. But it's going to be really difficult if you have an assistant inventor to go to a government and say, hey, I think you suck. Can you let me go to a floating island there to improve how you're doing things? That's not going to take you anywhere. But if you say, hey, look, we have this really good network of investors here, and we have this very good idea, and I noticed that you're struggling now post-COVID-19 to try to keep emissions low or to restart your economy. Let's work together. Sure, let's do that. I think that's the route. That's the way to go. Local governments. National governments, they are steps that come after. They're hard to approach sometimes. And supranational organizations are great for publicity, but also you have to focus on the business case, on the small local level, so that you can actually generate cooler things on a larger scale.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Natalie, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Yes. Thank you very much, Carly. Have a very nice day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
The Seasteading Today podcast is produced by John Bush. Your host is Carly Jackson. Send feedback and questions to podcast@seasteading.org. To support the podcast and the Seasteading mission, go to seasteading.org/donate. If you'd like to learn more, read the book, Seasteading, How Floating Nations Will Restore the Environment, Enrich the Poor, Cure the Sick, and Liberate Humanity from Politicians. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed, and we'll save you a spot on a seastead.